Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to Cozy Cryptid. I'm your host, Tanner, and since this is a pretty short one and I want to spend get this done and everything, it'll be just me this week. But this week we're in the Mexican state of Nayarit. The little Mexican state of Nayarit lies on the western coast of Mexico. While small in area, it is rich in history and legend. Today, we will look at its island prison, a strange and unexplained skull that has attracted much debate about its origins. A simple but touching legend from the state of Nayarit. Alrighty, okay. First up is Isla Marias, the Mexican Alcatraz. The year was 1928. The Mexican government had just sentenced a 14-year-old boy to the dreaded Las Marias Penitentiary. The teenager was a Communist Party member and radical political activist, José Revueltas. He would spend a few years there and return later in his life. Although considered harsh punishment for a teenage boy even at that time, Revueltas would later use his experience while incarcerated as inspirations for several novels and other works critical of the Mexican government. By the 1960s, Revueltas had become one of the leading intellectuals behind the student disturbances of 1968 and was considered one of Mexico's most important communist intellectuals of his day. In an island prison for his political dissent and other anti-government activities, José Revueltas never forgot the lessons learned during his first incarceration in Mexico, famous island prison in the Las Marias. Oh. So, over 3 years in another prison, 12 hours by boat off of the Pacific coast of the Mexican state of Nayarit, there exists a small remote archipelago of four islands, sometimes called Las Tres Marias, or the Three Marys in English. The three main islands of this group were named after biblical Mary figures. The main island, Maria Madre, was named after Mary, the mother of Jesus. The second largest island, named Maria Magdalena, comes from Mary Magdalene, a close female follower of Christ, and a witness to both the crucifixion and resurrection. The third of the Tres Marias is the island of Maria Cleofas, named for another Mary present at the crucifixion. The fourth main island of the chain, much smaller than three islands, bearing the name of Maria, is San Juanito, which is also the northernmost island. The islands are tropical and for the most part covered with lush vegetation, being home to interesting flora and fauna. Some animals are only found on these islands. The Trias Marias deer mouse lives in one place on Earth, Marias Clofas Island. The Trias Marias raccoon was once thought to be a separate species of raccoon, but is now regarded as a subspecies. The Trias Marias Amazon is a yellow-headed parrot and is unique to the islands. Many feral goats, dogs, and cats also live, also call the island chain home. Unique subspecies of flowers, trees, and other plants also exist in the Trias Marias Islands. Well, that's cool. So, the little, like, mouse guy? Was he? Like, the kangaroo mouse? Was it both together? Chris Fiction. Right here. Sorry. A little deer mouse? They're fucking adorable. When a small group of explorers made landfall in the islands in 1532, there were no signs of previous habitation. No evidence of ancient Native American habitation has since been found in the Islas Marias, and no legends or histories exist among indigenous groups on the mainland, indicating any knowledge of the existence of the islands. As with other remote islands throughout the world, early sailing ships left goats on islands to serve as a future food source. The goat colony there maintained a steady level of population. It did not completely destroy the ecosystem as in other places. In the mid-1800s, the islands saw many visits from America, flora and fauna collectors, especially those interested in tracking in yellow-headed parrot to sell to wealthy buyers in U.S. markets. Yep. Everyone's trying to fucking fuck shit up. Alright. The Mexican government of Benito Juarez was the first administration to look at the islands critically and was interested in even exploring them economically or locating a prison there. The prison idea didn't die, and by the time of the presidency of Porfirio Diaz, the Mexican government started making plans to use the island as a penal colony. Island prison colonies were something in the fashion at the time. Alcatraz in San Francisco, Bay and Devil's Island off the coast of French Guinea in South America were famous island prison colonies in the late 1800s. While Porfirio Diaz also saw expansion into and developed of Mexico's minor island territories as a way to increase national pride. On Isla Maria Madrilla, President Porfirio Diaz began with a lighthouse, and by 1905, Diaz and his prison had his prison. Look, sorry. The famous teenage prisoner on Las Marias, the activist and author Jose Rivetes, wrote a book in 1954 called Los Muros de Agua, or in English, Walls of Water, which aptly described the prison situation itself. Inmates were subject to various degrees of incarceration. Since there was nowhere to go, the ocean literally served as a prison wall to prevent escape. The early days of the prison were filled with stories of hard labor and torture. In the first few decades, the prisoners at Las Marias cut down most of the tropical hardwoods of the main island of Maria Grande and built most of their infrastructure in the small settlements of the island. The penal colony also had a small-scale manufacturing and workshops and farms that produce products set for export to the Mexican mainland. It's important to note that all this activity happened on Isla Maria Grande. Oh, so they're like 1800s. They're like looking at what we do with this island. When we can like take some resources off it. Like the guy's like, no, dude, let's make a prison. It'd be good for our country, and we show it off to everybody. And oh, speaking of Alcatraz, go listen to last podcast on the left. They did like a really good series on Alcatraz and that bird guy, got the birds and Alcatraz. It's really good. Go listen to it. Besides brief expeditions by support staff connected with the prison operation, the other islands and rocks of the group remained untouched. Throughout most of the 20th century, the prison population was not comprised of hardened criminals. At various points in time, even families were allowed to live with the prisoners in private homes on an island or were allowed 15-day visits from the mainland. Children of prisoners and those of the support staff needed a school, and there's also a need for shops and other services. So eventually, the prison island developed a town with a solid infrastructure, including a small hospital, stores, and even a home for a small congregation of nuns connected with the Isla Maria Chapel in Puerto Vallito. For many years, the colony was completely self-sufficient, raising fruit and vegetables and livestock and manufacturing its own items to sustain the island population. Sometimes prisoners tried to escape by making crude watercraft under the cloaks of darkness. No one ever made it to shore unassisted, though, because it was 62 miles to the coast of Narit and 230 miles from the southern tip of Baja. In 2011, six prisoners escaped by using plastic containers as flotation devices. They made it 60 miles south of the islands, but passing by spotted the inmates and they were returned to Las Marias. The penal colony had logged 76 successful escapes, but they were done with assistance of prison officials, ferrymen, and other support staff who accepted bribes to get the escapees off the island. In 1986, an entire family of kidnappers, the Reyes Servan brothers, fled the island and have never been heard from since. Among the 76 successful escapees, only 10 prisoners were captured. Many potential fugitives were deterred from making their own rafts to escape because, like Alcatraz, there were rumors of sharks in the surrounding waters. Escapees often fled to the jungle-covered hills in the island interior, but rarely did anyone elude capture for more than a few months. Ultimately, there was nowhere to go. By the beginning of the 21st century, the Isla Maria prison was the last island penal colony left in the Americas. On February 18, 2019, Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador announced the closure of Isla Maria. He said that it was more expensive to obtain a prisoner on the island than it was to house one on the mainland, and Mexico's jails were nowhere near capacity. The president also cited the tendency of the island chain to be hit by violent tropical storms that caused large amounts of damage. In López Obrador's push for more schools and less prisons, he had a grand plan to convert the penal colony into an educational center for Mexican school children. Since those prisons shut down, the Isla Maria has been seeing a gradual transformation. Many of the small businesses and the pre-shutdown population have remained during this transition to tourism and education. Four islands are open to large-scale tourism to include resorts and hotels. However, there must be repairs made to the damage done to the island's ecosystem. While the islands and rocks of the chain remain in a near pristine condition, over 100 years of the activities of a penal colony put a great strain on the island Isla Maria Grande biosphere. Efforts have been made in recent years to replant the hardwood trees logged in the early part of the 20th century. The Mexican government has also been encouraging restoration of more habitats for the unique yellow-headed parrot native to the island. For years, the population has been decreasing as many family members visiting inmates would smuggle parrots to sell at high prices to exotic pet brokers. The main prison complex is the process of being converted into a prisoner center and is named after island's most famous inmate, Jose Revueltas. While there is much work yet to be done, the Mexican government intends to finish the job in the next few years, and the island's Marias will return to the idyllic state once again. So, that's pretty cool, right? It's like a Mexican Alcatraz. And they're trying to make it to like a school and like tourism stuff. So if you're interested, like, you might want to read some book from Jose Revueltas. Something you might be interested in. But speaking of like environment and helping the environment, I'll tell you a little bit about this. Way you can help out the environment. What you do that is go get yourself a hat from SnazzerX.com. SnazzerX is a hat brand, and they work with several environmental charities to help the environment out. They make a promise of planting one tree for every hat they sell. They have a bunch of different types of hats, like dad hats and like flatbacks and snapbacks and all that. But you can save some money and help support the podcast as well as helping out the environment. Right now, they have giving Cozy Crypto listeners a deal of 35% off your order with code word Cozy Caps at checkout. Once again, and also if you buy one, if you buy five hats, you get one for free and free shipping along with your order. They have a day to day hat standard. They have like this cool like dad golf hats and a bunch of different materials and stuff. And you have like a classic like cap, you know, and you have like flat beds. And once again, you can use code word Cozy Caps to save 35% off your order at snazzerx.com and help out the environment and get yourself a cool hat and help out the podcast. But let's continue on with the show. Next up, we have the Star Child Skull. In the 1930s, a curious 900-year-old skull was found in Mexico. It appears human-like with a bulging forehead, no brow ridges, and a small mouth. At first glance, it is otherworldly. Is the skull from an alien or alien-human hybrid, or is it from a dwarf or child with extreme medical condition? We will first look into the history of the skull. We will examine what makes it different from a normal human skull. Then we will look into some of the scientific tests done on the skull, determine exactly what we are dealing with. Alrighty. Alright, so where did this skull come from? During the 1930s, a Mexican-American teenage girl from West Texas was visiting family members in the summer at a small village in the center part of the Mexican state of Chihuahua. Much as we see today, this girl's family was truly binational, living in and visiting different sides of the border during most of the girl's childhood. In one of those visits, the girl went exploring on her own and came across an abandoned mine shaft. Inside the mine tunnel, she discovered a human skeleton lying on its back, an arm bone sticking out of the dirt, the hands of that bone wrapped around the upper arm of the exposed skeleton. The girl dug up the buried skeleton, which she described as smaller than the exposed one and somewhat deformed. She gathered up all the bones and hid them nearby. She had intention of taking them back to the States, but left them in her hiding place until it was time for her to go back. Between her hiding of the bones and the time of her return to Texas, there had been a flash flood in the area that had washed away most of the bones but left the two skulls. The misshapen skull was damaged, missing a jaw and most of the teeth. She took what she could back across the border and kept the skulls for the rest of her life. She had them stored in her garage, and at one point she applied a varnish or clear shellac to the skulls, probably in an effort to preserve them. The girl would die well into her 70s, told the story of her skulls but a few times, and could never recall the exact location of the town she had visited at the time of her discovery. Chihuahua isn't named the largest state by Mexicans, and its terrain can be inaccessible and difficult to manage. The girl only knew that it was near the Copper Canyon, the largest canyon systems in the world, in remote Sierra Madrid Occidental. Whoa. When the discoverer of the skulls died in the mid-1990s, the skulls passed to the friends, eventually ended up in the hands of Melanie Young, a neonatal nurse from El Paso, Texas, in 1998. Nurse Young approached several of her co-workers at the hospital where she worked to try to understand what medical condition could have caused the skull to be so deformed. Not one of her medical colleagues could give Melanie an adequate explanation as to what was responsible for the deformity, and she cannot resist without answers. This is what she this is when she contacted Lloyd Pye, a paranormal researcher who just published a book called Everything You Know Is Wrong, Book 1, Human Evolution. From this meeting, the Star Child Project was eventually formed in February of 1999 with Pye as its director. After getting assistance from his contacts in various medical fields, Pye began to suspect the Mexican skulls had extraterrestrial origins. The initial tests on the skulls discovered the basics. It is from a male, and the wear on his teeth would indicate that it is not of a child. The skull dates to around 1100 AD and is contemporary to the Mixtec and Zapotec kingdoms in the south of Mexico, and a powerful Toltec empire which dominated central Mexico at the time. Lloyd Pye identified 24 distinctive Star Child skull anomalies, which set it apart from a normal skull. Taken from the Star Child Project website, these are the anomalies I'll name off.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
The bone is like no other bone on Earth. Its biochemical signatures is much richer in collagen than regular bone. Bone is uniformly half as thick or less than normal human bone. It is not thin in a specific area or areas due to abnormality. It is thin all over. The skull itself weighs half as much as a human skull's of a comparable size. The surface of normal human bones is covered with tiny holes called lacunae, which it performs the vital function, replacing all bone cells with new ones. The Star Child bone shows virtually no lacunae. Inside the bones are microscopic fibers that may act to reinforce and strengthen the bone. All bone is like a sandwich with hard cortical bone on the outside and porous cancellous bone that looks like a sponge in the middle. The cancellous bone is where the bone marrow is stored. After death, this marrow turns black and is consumed by microorganisms. The cancellous holes in the 900-year-old skull found next to Star Child are completely empty. However, the cancellous holes in the 900-year-old Star Child bone contains traces of red residue. The fuck? The lower face of the Star Child's skull is much smaller than a normal human. It has no brow ridges, which all primates have. Its forehead is smooth, curved straight down to its upper eye sockets, unlike humans or any higher primate. When the human forehead reaches upper eye socket, normally there's a sharp drop down to the pinched together bone that creates the upper nose. In the Star Child's, there is no drop. The nose extends straight and smooth from the forehead, staying wide and flat to the point where it is broken off, unlike that of humans and other and all higher primates. The Star Child skull eye sockets are unusually shaped and are only 0.7 inches at maximum depth, compared to normal human eye sockets, which average about 2 inches deep. The optic forums are the openings in the back of the human eye socket, which let in the optic nerve and all the other nerves and blood vessels that feed each eyeball and allow it to function. In the Star Child skull, they are shaped and positioned differently. A Star Child skull has no frontal sinuses, an extremely rare condition. All that remains of the child's lower face is the right side of Mixlea. The roof of its mouth was flat, like in any sign of a normal human arch, and like all of its lower, and all of its lower face is much smaller than any that of a normal human. The Star Child's zygomatic arches or cheekbones are broken off, but from the small fragment of remains, it remains clear that the space between the cheekbones and the other bones of the face is much smaller than it would be in the normal human. This is significant because the chewing muscles for the lower jaws pass through this space, and so must have been much smaller than a normal human. Human chewing muscles attach from the lower jaw to the side of the skull, extending over a large area of the skull. This Star Child's chewing muscles cover only about half an inch of the skull. The Star Child's skull ear holes are positioned lower on the head than in a normal human. Wow. The Star Child's inner ears are approximately twice the size of normal human inner ears. The Star Child's neck muscles attach in a way that indicates it was a very small neck relative to two typical humans, no more than half its normal size. Human neck muscles normally attach at an elevated point in the rear center of the occipital bone, the rear bone of the skull. The elevated point is called the external occipital protuberance, or inion for short. All humans, indeed all primates on Earth, have an inion. The Star Child skull does not. In addition to the external occipital protuberance, or the outside of the skull, there's an internal occipital protuberance on the inside. This functions like a shelf holding some of the weight of the brain. While the Star Child does not have this internal shelf, it is much smaller than it would be in a normal human. Though the rear of the Star Child skull is widely expanded and greatly flattened, this is not the result of lipid binding or cradle boring. This was verified in 2004 by Dr. Ted Robertson and his team. At the top of the rear of the Star Child's head is a noticeable crease at the rear of the sagittal suture, where it meets the labdoidal suture. The only possible way this can happen in the human skull is there's an abnormal fusion of the sagittal suture. A CAT scan showed there's no such abnormal fusions exist in the Star Child skull. The Star Child's physical size is a small adult in the range of 5 feet tall or an average 12-year-old, which means its brain should be about 1,200 cubic centimeters. An average adult has 1,400 cc of brain. Instead, the child has 1,600 cc of brain. The teeth of the skull are a controversial subject, as many experts feel that they show a child of about 5 years old. However, the dividing surfaces of the teeth are worn and grounded to a degree that seems impossible for such a young child, especially one with smaller than normal chewing muscles. Wow. So his skull is like goofy as fuck looking, dude. Right? He has a big ass head, can't fucking build stupid nose, can't chew nothing. Little beetle eyes. It's looking like, damn, you know, given these physical anomalies of what are the DNA evidence? The skull has been tested at least 6 times. As it is very expensive to run such tests, a full genome on the skull has not yet been developed. The first test took place at a Canadian lab in 1999. The Star Child Skull Project dismisses the results found in the lab because of the carelessness and contamination. The lab was also not equipped to search for ancient DNA in the supposed Y chromosome discovered, which was not found by the next lab to investigate the skull, or alleged to be from someone who had handled the skull over the years. The second round of DNA tests took place at a California lab called Trace Genetics. Those findings show that the skull had some Native American DNA consistent with the indigenous tribes of Chihuahua, but there was much of the DNA that was either missing or unexplained. Okay. According to the Star Child Project website, the skull was then sent to an undisclosed lab with a geneticist during pro bono work on the skull. The unnamed geneticist has been found some DNA in the skull that was exclusively human, but when data was sent to the National Institute of Health to find matches with other with other species, it was found that there's no conclusive match with any known species on Earth. Testing on the skull is ongoing, and many tests need to be replicated in order to be upheld to rigorous scientific scrutiny. Scientists and amateur debunkers have come out harshly against the idea that skull represents tangible evidence of alien visitation, or in the case of this claim, of it being an alien-human hybrid, ancient alien genetic manipulation of humans. Yeah, that's weird. Debunkers claim that not enough tests have been run in the event that the anonymous geneticist at the secret lab who had been responsible for most of the testing should come forth and be known. Others dismiss anything to do with the extraterrestrials out of hand, say that the simplest explanation is often the correct explanation, that a skull belongs to an unfortunate human, a dwarf suffering from massive deformities, or a child with a case of Hutchinson-Gilford syndrome, or a simple hydrocephalia. However, this explanation doesn't account for all the 24 anomalies found between the Star Child skull and known human skulls. So, is the Star Child skull proof of alien visitation to Mexico? As always, leave the conclusion up to you. Wow. That's very interesting. In my opinion, it's... I have to see, get more testing done. That's what we need to do. But the unknown DNA is very telling. Right now, paleo, like, there was a thing like Head University did a thing on it. Alrighty. So next up, we're gonna do talk about talk about some things. Alrighty. So, there are some ways you can help support the podcast. First off, you can, easiest and simplest way is just listen, really. Listen, tell your friends about it. But also check out the merchandise, get a shirt or a hat, a shirt or like a hoodie or like a sticker, which you can find at cozycrypto.com. And there should be a link down there on the main page. Also, you can check out Waverlo. They're a watch company, and they have a bunch of cool watches and stuff. Save 50% off your order with code word CozyTime at waverlo.com. But maybe you want some like a cool clothes or something. You can go to Giovanni Dolce and save 30% off your order with code word CozyCryptid20, or go to BrutImpact.com. And say 25% off your order with code word 25_Tanner. Or maybe you want to get some nice jewelry for your special lady friend or your spouse or someone who just likes jewelry. Go to Serafia.com, save 90% off your order with code word CozyBling90. But maybe you want some cool guy jewelry. And you go over to Blondie. And you use Cozy Drip 25 for 25% off order at Blondie.com. Or maybe you want some sunglasses. It is summer after all. You can go to either NoLilyGlasses.com and save 80% off your order with Cozy Shade 80s. Or go over to AliceMartelSG.com and save 80% off with Cozy80 at checkout. There's more brands you can check out at CozyCrypto.com/brands. There should be code words there. You can find all that. And all those help support the podcast financially. If you want to. And don't forget to follow. And also, don't forget to follow me and watch me on Twitch at twitch.tv/G1Tanner. Right now, I'm playing Red Dead Redemption 2. I'm about the story, and I'll be doing that after this. Then get done recording and uploading this to my thing. I go do, yeah. But check it out and help support the show. If there are any questions, yeah. Okay, I believe this is the last quick little story. Indigenous legend from Narit, the mythical origins of a turquoise lake. In pre-Hispanic times, there was once a wealthy city-state called Mistisilin, is what is now the central part of the Mexican state of Narit. It became a rich little kingdom through trade with the Pacific coast, the larger empires of the Aztec and the Tarascans. A great king and queen ruled over Mixcoatlan and lived in an opulent palace with many servants. They had one child, a daughter, a beautiful young woman named Tepozilama. Ziyama? As she was the only royal offspring, the king and queen guarded her with extreme care. One day, Tepozilama went for a walk in the company of her ladies in waiting, when suddenly they saw a wounded deer. As they approached to help the deer, the strong voice of a young man called out to them, to which Tepozilama replied, "Who are you, and what are you doing here?" The young warrior responded, "I am Pinotili. It was a love at first sight between the princess and the young warrior, Pinotili. Even though Pintonti was from a rival kingdom to the south, they vowed to put all political differences aside and promised to see each other as often as possible. A few weeks later, during an important festival in the city of Michizitlan, Princess Tepozilama left the kingdom to see Pinto. The young woman's father, realizing her absence, questioned her ladies in waiting and made them tell them the whereabouts of the princess. The king, with his personal guards, went in search of Tepozilama to the place where the ladies had indicated, a hidden corridor in sort of a no man's land between the rival kingdoms. It was there where the king and his guards found Tepozilama in company of Pinto. When she approached her father, the princess said, "My father, I know what my sin is very great, but I am in love, and I humbly ask for permission for me to marry him." The king replied, "My daughter, never be in love with one of my worst enemies." Then turned to his guards and said, "Take her away, tie her up, and don't beat her." So they lashed her to a tree and did the same with Pinto. Thus, Tepozilama and Pantolini remained tied within sight of one another. So close, but yet so far. They cried for days and nights at their misfortune. The tears formed the enormous and beautiful turquoise-colored lake, known today as Laguna de Santa Maria del Oro. That's a cool story, dude. Fuck. A sad little... Let me cry like a bitch if I had to be tied up and stare at my loved one. All right. Thank you for... Right, that's pretty much the end of the episode. It's again pretty short, right? So, but again, you can go to cozycryptid.com and ask some questions. I'm trying to get a listener episode in, and on the subject to put a listener episode so I know what's about. All right, it's at cozycryptid.com, cozycryptid.com. That is the website for the podcast, but you can also find it everywhere you listen to podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pod App, whatever, fucking Podchaser. Leave reviews on Podchaser and iTunes. Just let me know what you think. If you want to be a guest on the show, there's also a form there. If you want to be on a guest on the show. check me out. Check out the podcast on Instagram and TikTok. Both are Cozy Cryptic Podcast. And on Twitter, at Cozy Cryptic Pod on Twitter. I'll see you next week. And tell your friends about the show. And I hope you have a wonderful week.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.